Permissible Activism, originally published on May 25th, 2021, on the Anti-Politics Substack. My first encounter with what could reasonably be described as a leftist activist was over 10 years ago at an Amnesty International presentation to my sixth form debate club. Absolute chad, I know. They recommended some student speakers from a World Without Borders group, so stood before the assembled nerds, who were mostly just there for a priority lunch pass, were these two painfully posh crust punk types with white people dreadlocks who spoke like they were on a gap year, giving a utopian presentation that was basically the lyrics to John Lennon's Imagine, interspersed with dark mutterings about direct action. The entire experience was painful and embarrassing for everyone involved, not least of all the well-meaning tutor who'd organized the talk. In his mind, he just wanted to get the students more politically engaged. But inadvertently, he'd exposed us all to the pantomime that is modern political activism and the type of warped creature that partakes in it. At the time, I'd encountered another brand of activism online, the beginnings of the now endlessly and universally cringed at Anonymous, in the form of 4chan's campaign against the Church of Scientology. The internet was supposed to revolutionize activism, and this event is often cited as a watershed moment in organizing physical protest using the resources of the digital world to fight and overcome a larger foe with greater resources. The only issue is, as someone who was there at the time, that's purely fiction. What little was achieved mostly revolved around keeping information and cult resources accessible online that lawyers had been continuously suppressing for years. The part everyone remembers, the real-life protests with the infamous Guy Fawkes masks, was a mildly embarrassing and wholly symbolic act even at the time. The iconography of Anonymous filtered into the mass protest movements of all kinds and became a symbol of listless, unfocused, and painfully twee rebelliousness. Protests in which people stand around for a cause no one seems to fully agree on, against an opponent no one can quite define, to enact nebulous change no one really understands. It is people merely going through the motions of expected political action. It is safe, it is forgettable, but most of all, it is permissible. Nowhere is protest and activism safer or more ingrained than in universities. Students are expected to be engaged in some form of leftward political activism to the point it has become a cliche since the 1970s. Those who partake often going through the motions as described above, with many of the more violent actors in their midst being long-time bust-in renter riot agitators with a variety of causes under their belt. We are led to believe by those who posit themselves as guardians of the West that through this activism, the universities have become the main wellspring of all political ills, and that the activists that spew forth are the agents of revolutionary chaos that we must defeat at all costs. As a response to this, there has arisen a type of anti-left activist whose purpose is to play the counter role to whatever cause the activist class has taken up. They have no identity outside of being against the left and embody the Marxist idea of reactionary, not only in thought, but in function. This has come to dominate what is loosely defined as the new right or anti-SJW activist space, and most of the popular figures featured negatively in mainstream media are lauded in alternative media, fit this mold to a T. I would say as a note that this piece really predates the overuse of the term anti-woke. I would have used it here if it was in more common parlance. Even two and a bit years ago in 2021, it wasn't. They ceremonially do battle with evil communists on campus, both sides replete with their shiny LARP gear as we boo and cheer our respective champions. Others fight endlessly on Twitter and YouTube, slaying their dirty leftist foes with facts and logic. In their minds, this is a battle for the soul of their nation, and what is done on these hallowed grounds will decide its fate. Online slap fights become the front line of an existential war we must only win at what cost. But one thing is very clear, none of this matters. This form of unreality prevents both arbitrary sides from looking at those who are consequential parts of the power structure. What really happens if we defeat Antifa? What materially changes if Extinction Rebellion gets booed off the streets? Conversely, What changes if Antifa defeat the Proud Boys? None of the activists involved hold any real power. Despite what Reason.com or Breitbart might tell you about Antifa, BreadTube, Extinction Rebellion, Black Lives Matter, or even someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they aren't actually setting the agenda. The naive students, counter-protesters, professional agitators don't hold any real sway within the power structure. They are simply there as loud agitation. Those who hold and wield power have as much disgust for the middle-class crust-punk activists or the blood-and-soul LARPers as everyone else. Most of those supposedly radical activists are employed by government-funded NGOs or are agents of alphabet agencies who act as their handlers. There is no danger of a far-left or far-right revolution because those who claim to want it are overwhelmingly led by assets of the existing state. It is one arm of the government pretending to fight another arm in a controlled way. That's why the discourse is allowed to take place. That's why the discourse we see is permissible. Leftist activists are low-hanging fruit. You're supposed to get angry at them. In doing so, they set the debate. The right would not be talking about, for example, trans children, unless the left were engaging in activism that steers the discussion. Instead of implementing useful change, or even discussing it, they endlessly engage with red rags professional agitators wave in front of them. Both sets of activists end up engaging in the same permissible debate, wasting time, energy, and money on fighting causes that did not exist outside of the fever dream of a handful of academics and radicals until they became a useful distraction. Suddenly, your revolutionary movement, no matter where it falls on the political map, is only talking about the minutiae of childhood consent to hormones. It no longer focuses on those who hold real power. The vast majority of modern political discourse is made up of surrogate activism by design. It insulates those in the power structure from examination through layers of useless debate. The end result of surrogate activism within the political process is always the same: false compromise. The two imaginary sides come together and agree to implement what side X wants, but at the pace side Y is happy with, or to add meaningless safeguards and caveats. When framed as social issues, the left gains concessions. When framed as security issues, the right gains concessions. Both sides are then able to go back to the populace or their respective audiences and inform them that their will has been implemented and the thirst for change has been satiated. The mission accomplished banners come out on both sides and nothing changes, apart from what those who hold the reins of power want to change. The issues involved and the groups involved don't actually matter. They are interchangeable, and as we've seen over the past few years, they change at quite the pace. What matters is the process ending in the performative act of compromise. It's a miniature version of the peaceful handover of power and the compromises therein. It allows ideas that the populace at large may find utterly distasteful to become part of the public fabric, as they supposedly prevent conflict as a means of compromise. Within a modern liberal democracy, you must always surrender to ideas the elite wants to implement if they can pretend a sizable or loud enough minority believe them. This is a method of manufacturing consent. How this process is kept in check is a strict enforcement of what is and isn't permissible activism. As we've seen with the rhetoric since January 6th and the Capitol Hill Reichstag fire reenactment, activism relating to the fraudulent results of the election is strictly beyond the pale. Despite all rhetoric against them, the MAGA believers were tolerated within the discourse up until the 2020 election. Those who followed Donald Trump were allowed their own space within the activist stage show after all this was useful containment. But as soon as it butted up against the ugly realities of real state power, it was suddenly nixed. Even as reaction to a mostly imaginary threat, the removal from the political process of the MAGA movement has been almost total. Now they have no way within the system to express their displeasure. Their ideas, as middle-of-the-road and basic bitch populist as they are no longer permitted because they stepped a toe outside the pre-agreed political talking points by questioning the legitimacy of the voting system, and they will expend a huge amount of political energy simply trying to return to where they were prior to 2016. Bear in mind, these are not people who wholesale question the legitimacy of state power and those who wield it. They just wanted the power structure spray-tanned orange and draped in the American flag. I believe that section's been borne out in its entirety recently as we see people attempting to recapture the magic of MAGA, and they are effectively saying return to 2016. It has become rather prophetic. The difference between a domestic terrorist and an activist in the US or UK is the same difference between a rebel or an ISIS fighter in Syria. It's what the CIA says it is. If you extol the virtues of a worldview that could genuinely threaten the power structure and those within it, you are no longer engaging in activism. You are, in their eyes, engaging in terrorism. You have gone beyond the pale of acceptable ideas and must be disavowed by those activists supposedly on your side, those who have a stake in the left-right stage show continuing. Permissible activism is often profitable, and those who engage in it by design don't fundamentally change anything, so there is no feasible endpoint. It is the perfect grift. They can subsist as the pets of the power structure, dogs barking at each other over a mostly digital fence. Those in power don't parade an 8-year-old around in drag because they genuinely believe in the virtues of drag artistry to change the world. They do it as an act of ritual humiliation and transgressive power demonstration. They do it to whip up the professional activists, create a debate in which we compromise on just a little paedophilia and make everyone go home. Ultimately, they do it because they want to demonstrate they can, and to waste your time engaging in a good faith argument with dishonest people who would say or do anything to retain power and make you out to be their enemy. Because the uncomfortable answer is that nothing changes until there is a vast overcorrection in regards to the power structure, a line of thinking not permissible in any kind of legitimate activism, and one that will eventually result in the kind of fate that befell 20 Branch Davidian children.